Okay, well, you all know what that means. It's time again for one of our little chats. This time I'm going to do something different, and I'm going to be talking more about historical stuff and basic various sundry facts and rock trivia that some of you may know and some of you may not. One of the things you probably noticed is different in this podcast is I started out by playing bass instead of guitar. I joke about it from time to time, but I didn't know how many of you folks out there in listener land thought I was serious, but I actually do play about 7 different instruments. Bass is sort of my second home instrument, and I really, really like it. For those of you who don't know that last little piece I played, that dates back all the way to like 1966, I think, certainly mid to late 60s. Off one of the Yardbirds' early recordings with Paul Samuel Smith playing bass for them. Many of you may or may not know that probably 3 of the best classic rock guitarists ever in rock history have come from that band, the Yardbirds, which spawned Jeff Beck, Eric Clapton, and Jimmy Page. So it's kind of hard to argue with that kind of success. At the time of that particular recording, I think Jeff Beck was at the helm, but don't quote me on that one. I do know that Paul Samuel Smith was a bass player who eventually went on to lead a life as a producer individual who gave up the bass to do producing stuff. The scuttlebutt is that he got tired of Keith Relf doing, it was the lead singer, doing all the alcohol, drugs, whatever he was doing, and kind of got fed up and, quit the band and went to producing them. And if I'm not mistaken, Jimmy Page got brought in originally as a bass player and then moved into a guitar position. But again, don't quote me on that. That's my memory of that. At any rate, Paul Samuel Smith went on to produce a lot of other artists, including Cat Stevens, back when he was known as Cat Stevens, of course. So he has a pretty florid history in the rock field, apart from just being a member of the Yardbirds, as if that wasn't illustrious enough. The thing that amazes me is that from the time, that bass riff was pretty amazing when you consider most of the bass guys were doing, pretty simple, what I call bump, 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 and sort of, and no offense to country music when I say this, but kind of this doom, doo-doom, 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 doom-doom. You know, that bass just bores the ever-loving pajuzies out of me. Excuse me, most bass players were doing pretty much second fiddle, no pun intended. Okay, maybe a little one. Stuff to guitar players, and for Paul Samuel Smith to come up with that riff, I thought was really, really cool. Sort of in that same time frame, as many of you know, McCartney was playing bass with the Beatles, and his bass lines were certainly anything but boring or boom boom. He was quite the accomplished musician, and still is, as far as I'm concerned. Really does some, I think, underrated bass stuff, particularly considering him doing the vocals and coming up with those really cool bass lines. It amazes me how many people think that Paul McCartney was the lead guitar player for the Beatles. It's really like, really, are you that uninformed? I mean, for real. And for those of you who thought that, now you've been demystified. Paul McCartney was primarily the bassist and one of the lead vocalists for the Beatles. John Lennon was predominantly the rhythm guitar player and vocals, lead vocalist for the band. Paul McCartney also played piano and If I'm not mistaken, John played some piano as well with them. The lead player, of course, was George Harrison, who occasionally played bass on certain songs, including Hey Jude, if I'm not mistaken, in which he plays a Fender six-string bass, which is also a bass, by the way, that Jack Bruce of Cream fame started out on the first couple of Cream recordings, I think was playing a Fender six-string bass. And certainly his bass riffs for the late 60s were anything but complacent or second fiddle in any way, shape, or form. That still is, in my personal opinion, one of the best bass players ever. And the thing that just amazes me with people like Jack Bruce is the same thing that amazes me with people like Felix Pappalardi, is that they're multi-instrumentalists, they're songwriters, they're vocalists, and they're really good on a number of instruments. They're not just, okay, I'm a bass player and I kind of play piano or I kind of play guitar or I kind of do. I mean, these guys were like, oh my freaking God, they were great. For those of you who don't know Felix Pappalardi, he produced most of the Cream recordings and played Mellotron on White Room, which is the keyboard-like instrument that you hear doing the oohs and ahs in the back, so to speak. Before the days of digital samplers and synthesizers, the Mellotron was sort of the go-to instrument for folks who wanted to do orchestration back in the day. And it was a pretty finicky instrument. It required these laserdisc-like things in which orchestration had been recorded, and you literally put this like floppy kind of laserdisc in this machine that was a keyboard that you played, that you got all these flutes and, you know, strings and stuff. It's the same thing that's John Paul Jones of Led Zeppelin used to play a lot of stuff at Zeppelin concerts. And you'll hear Jones complaining about them because they're very finicky. They have to, you know, heat up to a certain temperature. Otherwise, the discs kind of get flat and wavy and warbly and weird. They were really, really temperamental instruments. But in the day, they were the greatest thing since sliced bread in terms of not having an orchestra in your studio. They were uber expensive, of course, but they were cool little deals in their day. Now, of course, with the digital technology we've had since probably certainly since the late and middle 90s. I mean, originally digital technology, in case those of you who don't know, started out in the mid-80s with Stevie Wonder, who had Mr. Kurzweil built him an electronic keyboard. Kurzweil was an IT guy. He was not a musician, to my best remembrance. And he built Stevie Wonder this keyboard that could split into different sections and do all kinds of cool stuff. And that sort of started the digital era of incorporating computer-like technology into musical stuff. And we've sort of not looked back since then. But to get back to my original thesis, this being a rock trivia and informational kind of podcast for folks just to kind of sit back and go, oh, wow, didn't know that stuff. You know, these bass player guys, you know, back in the day I thought were really amazing to come up with their stuff given the sort of the era of the time they grew up in and the kind of folks that they were playing. You know, certainly folks today, such as, you know, Billy Sheehan from Mr. Big, also with a great jazz trio called Niacin, if you guys haven't heard about that, do some really cool stuff there. Great, great jazz trio, instrumental trio. But certainly Billy Sheehan's a fabulous bassist. Geddy Lee, of course, probably one of the best-known current prog rock creative bass guys, who also, you know, is another one of these guys that does keyboards and sings and plays keyboards and bass and sings at the same time, which is, you know, kind of disgusting for those of us who have sort of a one-track mind. But he's really talented. And, you know, there's certainly a lot of folks out there. While I certainly am not into funk or any of that kind of stuff, it's hard to argue that Flea is not a really good bass player. You know, regardless of whether you like the music he puts out or not, he's a really, really great bass player. Chris Squire, of course, of Yes, has been a fabulous bassist from day one back in the 70s when they were first coming around. And he's traditionally done really unique and very interesting licks, which I've always appreciated. Tim Bogert, another very underrated bassist and probably unknown to most of you. Tim Bogert also was with a band originally, I think, with Vanilla Fudge, which also Carmen Appice, drummer, who later went off with Tim Bogert to do Cactus, and then hooked up with Jeff Beck later to do Beck, Bogart, and Appice, which is just a really cool three-piece powerhouse trio band. It's really awesome licks, and Bogart's just a really cool bass player. It does some really unusual stuff, and the most latest kind of thing I've seen from him was playing on a Michael Schenker CD where he's playing bass on some stuff, and it's really great stuff. And Michael, of course, being a very, very underrated, in my personal opinion, guitar player back in the day, originally with Scorpions and UFO and that sort of thing. He's probably best known for his work with UFO and his solo work since then. And for those of you who don't know, his brother, Rudolph, is the rhythm player for the Scorpions, so that's why they both play flying V's. One has a black, one of the V's is black and the other is white, and then it's reversed for the other brother. So, you know, I thought that was kind of cute. Getting back to the bass things, though, back of the 60s and 70s, you know, you had these guys doing these incredible bass riffs from these guys who were just doing these thump-thump stuff. It was just like, wow. I mean, they just really, really stood out. The other bass riff that I really like, sort of in that late 60s era, is the bass riff on All Right Now. So for those of you who haven't heard that, and I apologize, I do not remember the bass player for the name of that band was Free. Did another great song, Fire and Water. And most of you, if you don't know Free, you definitely know the lead singer of Free, even though you don't know you know the lead singer. And you know the drummer, even though you don't know you know the drummer. Lead singer is Paul Rogers, who most of you probably know as the lead singer for Bad Company, and then went on to do The Firm with Jimmy Page and some solo stuff where he does a lot of blues rock stuff. Still a really just an amazingly fabulous vocalist. Also plays keyboards and guitar, but he's predominantly a vocal guy, just really still strong. The drummer, Simon Kirk, when Free dissolved, went with Paul Rogers to do the band Bad Company. So those two are still the original two Bad Company members, along with Mick Ralphs, the guitarist. Their bass player, Boz Burrell, died a few years ago. I don't remember what he died of, which is why they don't have him with them in their current lineup. But anyway, the bass player for Free, whose name escapes me at the moment, Paul Kossoff, is, of course, a really good guitar player who unfortunately overdosed at a very young age on heroin, if I'm not mistaken. But the bass player had this great lick in the middle of that song. It was just really cool. And you sort of hear that and you're going, huh? You know, when you consider the era and, you know, sort of the mode of the day, I mean, that was just amazing stuff. And you hear some of the McCartney stuff and some of the Jack Bruce stuff and, you know, some stuff by these guys are just, what the heck was that kind of thing? I'll tell you another bass player that you guys probably don't know you know, and if any of you have heard any songs by the band that he used to play with, you know the classic one that everybody's heard like 500,000 times, but they actually do have some cool songs other than that. The bassist I'm referring to is Lee Dorman, and most of you guys probably go, who the heck is that? He was the bass player for Iron Butterfly, who many of you may know by song, but not by name. They're the Enigata DeVita band, one of the first drum solos on record. Ron Bushy, if I'm not mistaken, was their drummer. Doug Engle was their vocalist that had sort of that low, grindy kind of voice and organ player. But if you go back and listen to some of their stuff, particularly some of the what would be considered now, quote-unquote, deep cuts, things like In the Time of Our Lives or Soul Experience or any of the stuff that's not Enigata DeVita, which is probably the only song most of you know by them. Lee Dorman just does some just amazing stuff at then. And, you know, that was all mid to late 60s stuff, early 70s stuff. And you're listening to this stuff going, oh, my Lord. I mean, just amazing stuff. Another, you know, guy sort of in that same era, along the same late 60s, you know, early 70s, who is, of course, still extant today, still playing with the same band today, is, you know, Geezer Butler, the bassist for Black Sabbath, who and the band Heaven and Hell, which is basically Black Sabbath with Ronnie James Dio and Vinnie Appice, who's Carmen Appice's brother, on drums. And, of course, most of you know Ronnie James is no longer with us. He passed away a couple of years ago from cancer. And what a tremendous vocalist that guy was. Holy shoes, that guy had a voice. at any rate, you know, Geezer is just still just a really great bassist. And if you listen to some of that stuff, it's just really amazing back then. And I think a lot of people, you know, were influenced a lot by his stuff. And I listened to a lot of the old Sabbath records during the Ozzy era. And not that I don't like Ronnie James Dio's Black Sabbath era, because I do, but it's just when you think back time-wise, again, of, you know, the milieu of what was going on with these guys, you know, you had four or five guys who were just really freaking fabulous on bass, and a lot of these folks just kind of went unnoticed, like, you know, like Lee Dorman, like Tim Bogert. It just, you know, I don't think these guys got the acclaim that they really deserved. So it was really kind of sad. But, you know, people like Paul McCartney, you know, are multi-instrumentalists. People like Felix Pappalardi, who, by the way, I didn't quite finish my story with Felix. Most of you may or may not know Felix did a lot of producing and recording stuff in the field. And what he's best known for in my book, really, again, working with Cream and, you know, being friends with Jack Bruce. I always call Felix Pappalardi the American Jack Bruce because they're very similar. They both play bass really well. They have somewhat similar styles. They both play keyboards. They both sing, although Jack Bruce has got a much lower range voice and Pappalardi's got much more of a tenor voice. They both play, you know, keyboards. They both play, like, cello and viola, you know, and they both play guitar. And Jack Bruce is also a pretty mean harmonica player as well. They both write stuff, and they're both just really great writers. Pappalardi, music-wise, is best known for the rock band Mountain. And for those of you who don't know, that's the band that Leslie West comes from, who used to be the 300-pound-plus lead guitar player and vocalist. And, of course, if many of you are going, he's lost a lot of weight in recent years. If you've seen him back in the day, seen pictures of him back in the day and see him now, you wouldn't know him, but size-wise. But what a great guitar player that guy is, and was and still is. He's still very, very emotional. And, you know, as he himself has said of his own style, he's not the fastest guy. He's not, you know, the greatest guitar player on the planet. But the stuff that he puts out is so impactful. It's very spiritual. His notes are very, I would call, gut-wrenching. And probably my favorite Leslie West riffs are his lead solo that he does on a theme for an imaginary Western, which is the song that they played, one of the songs they played at Woodstock. And for those of you who don't know, that's a Jack Bruce song. So, and when Cream broke up originally, Jack Bruce did his first solo record, Songs for a Tailor. And the second song, I think, on the album, on the recording, was a theme from an imaginary Western. It doesn't have anything like the Mountain version. And I like both versions very, very much. But I just think Leslie's gut-wrenching, just soulful lead on that at Woodstock is just amazing. I mean, literally, guys, and I'm not trying to be funny, I literally almost cry every time I hear that solo. It's just so emotional. It's just like, holy moly. And for those of you who are still going, who the hell is Mountain? Mississippi Queen. Okay, hello. You know, and it's another band that, you know, they think that they're a one-hit wonder, but they're really not. I mean, Mountain had just a boatload of great tunes and really, 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 really liked the original four-piece configuration. And I have some of their later iterations. And, you know, after Felix passed away in the early 80s in a supposed accidental, you know, gunfiring with his wife at the time, Gail Collins, but I don't know how you get shot in the throat accidentally. That's the story I heard. I don't know how true that is, so don't quote me on that, fans. And I don't want any lawsuits from Gail Collins's lawyers or anything. I just know there was alleged some argument going on, and, you know, supposedly I think the story is Felix was trying to show her how to shoot because he was on the road or whatever, and the gun went off, quote unquote, accidentally, and, you know, shot him in the throat, I think, and killed him. And I don't know all the details, so I really shouldn't be talking, but In the final analysis, he was killed accidentally or whatever by gunshot by his wife at the time, from what I understand. Again, I don't know if it was an accidental dilly or whatever. And, you know, don't know the facts, so whatever. But when he died, Mountain, I thought, lost really a lot of the... It was just great, the contrast between his voice and his writing style and his bass playing. And Leslie West writing style and vocals, and they were just a perfect foil for each other. I just really, really, really liked them a lot, and just thought those two guys were just amazing as a duo. And not that Leslie isn't a great powerhouse on his own. He's a, you know, he's still got a great, you know, kind of the great blues, raunchy rock vocals and this great gut-wrenching guitar playing. This is really good stuff. And when you hear some of the Mountain bass licks, you know, because we're talking about bass players predominantly today, you know, and you're listening to Jack Bruce and, you know, all those guys back in the day, it's just like amazing to hear those folks, because you still hear those bass licks, and whether you like the style of music or not, you hear those licks from people like, you know, Chris Squire or Jack Bruce or Pappalardi or Tim Bogert, you know, and you hear that stuff today, you know, Geezer Butler stuff, whatever, and it's Lee Dorman, all those guys I mentioned, and it's still, you're still going, holy moly, you know, it's still like, holy crap, that's great bass playing. It's just like, God, it's so innovative and cool. And I think that's kind of what makes it classic. That's what makes it great, you know. You listen to Beethoven, you listen to Bach, you listen to Mozart, you listen to Handel, you know, whatever your shtick is, Wagner, you know, whatever, Stravinsky, Vivaldi. And that stuff today still sounds great. It still resonates. It still moves your spirit. And I really think that a lot of the classic rock stuff does the same thing, particularly with certain instrumentation and certain, you know, guys that were just, in my mind, maestros of their instrument. And especially guys like Pappalardi and Bruce and McCartney, who can play just numerous stuff, and they sang and they ride, and it's just like, holy shoes, who got all the, you know, why'd you guys get all the talent, you know? But it's just really cool when you see that stuff and you know some of the history behind that stuff, and it's just really amazing. And I think a lot of folks today, music, in my particular opinion, and again, this is just one guy talking, is very formularic today. I heard an interview with Geddy Lee of Rush, obviously, who's still one of my all-time favorite bass players. I would rank him easily among the aforementioned individuals. He's just a more modern-day guy for that, but, you know, he's still freaking fabulous and just a powerhouse. As one of my neighbors would say, he's almost a freak of nature. He's so good, you know. And same thing, of course, goes to Neil Peart, their drummer, who is just amazing. I don't really consider Neil a drummer. I consider him a percussionist, very much like I do Carl Palmer of ELP or, you know, Ginger Baker of Cream. Those guys are percussionists. Those guys are not drummers. You know, they're just not. They're better than that. They're beyond that. That reminds me, Greg Lake is a really fabulous bass player as well, particularly if you hear his work back, which again was in the late 60s, if you hear his work with King Crimson, which is the band he sort of started out with. If you go back and listen to those first two King Crimson recordings, In the Wake of Poseidon, which is the second one, and In the Court of the Crimson King, which is the first one, if you listen to some of the bass licks he's doing on 21st Century Schizoid Band, which is still my all-time favorite song by them, I mean, it's just amazing, the little jazz, kind of free-form prog rock, jazz rock thing they do in the middle of that song. It's just really freaking amazing. It's just, you know, and that's another guy who can, you know, he plays bass, he plays guitar, he writes, he's got a great voice. You know, it's just, and you know, it goes from that to ELP, and then, you know, doing the solo stuff and some of the Greg Lake Band stuff he did when, you know, ELP was taking a hiatus for a while. And, you know, he's even, for those of you who don't know, he's even filled in on a tour with Asia at one point, I think in the late 80s. But the guys just really, those guys are just really amazing. And, you know, the music that those folks did back then, I think, was so cool for what the era that they were in. And they were doing some really unusual things that their companions and cohorts weren't doing. And to me, a lot of music today, it just all sounds the same. It's people trying to emulate each other. It's everybody trying to sound like, you know, Foo Fighters, or everybody trying to sound like, you know, you pick, Three Days Grace. And, you know, the first bands to come out with that stuff, of course, that's great. And I'm not knocking it, but it's just like, God, because, you know, because the rest of these bands do something different instead of trying to sound like these folks. You know, the guys that back in the day, I mean, they didn't sound like anything except themselves. They were groundbreakers. I don't hear that so much anymore. You know, I hear all this formularic stuff, and I hear all this record company promoted stuff to make money. And record companies, in my personal opinion these days, and really has been, I would say, for the last 15, 20 years, they're not signing artists. They're signing money makers. They're signing one and two hit wonder guys that are, you know, put together that, to make money. They're not classic artists. They're not going to be around forever and a day. You're not going to see any more Eric Claptons. You know, I'm not saying you're not going to see any more. That's ridiculous for me to say that. I'm not seeing any. I'm not seeing any bands that are going to stand the test of time or artists that are going to stand the test of time. You're not seeing any Aerosmiths. You're not seeing any Bostons. You're not seeing any Zeppelins. You're just not. You know, and that's another bass player that was, you know, that I think is underrated, because while he plays a lot of simplistic stuff for some of their stuff, it fits really well. Now, that's a guy who is like, talk about a multi-instrumentalist, John Paul Jones, holy moly. That guy plays a whole bunch of stuff. Most of you guys may or may not know, you know, when Zeppelin played live, he was doing bass and keyboard simultaneously, doing bass pedals, kind of like Geddy Lee does with the stuff. He was sort of an old school Geddy Lee in a sense, even though, you know, technically he's not as fancy as Geddy on bass, and I'm not slamming him, it's just a different style of music. But, you know, here's a guy playing keyboards and bass with his, doing bass pedals with the feet and stuff, and, you know, it's like Raymond Zarek of the Doors. I mean, that guy was playing bass and keyboards with the Doors their entire time they were playing live. And, you know, whether you like the Doors or not, or whether you think Jim Morrison's a, you know, good vocalist or not, and he's personally definitely not my style. I don't like any of those tenory, I mean, those non-tenory kind of bassy guys that, and no offense, it's just not my thing. I mean, I don't do the guys that sound like they're drunk and they can't enunciate their words. They have what I call the Los Angeles wah-wah, you know. It's just, oh my gosh. Same reason I don't like any of these grunge singers and these guys. I mean, an exception of that is obviously Chris Cornell, because the guy's got a tenor voice and he's got like the awesome rock voice. But most of these low register folks, just don't do it for me. It's just his personal preference. But, you know, Manzarek is doing all these keyboard stuff and doing bass riffs too, because the Doors didn't have a bass player, right? Until Jim Morrison died and the Doors went on tour, you know, with the two recordings they did after his death, where they had bass players on stage. Ray Manzarek was doing all the bass stuff, you know, just with one hand and playing the keyboards with the other. I mean, that's really cool. You know, so you've got people who were really innovative back in the day, and you've got folks who, you know, did things that other folks didn't do. It's like John Lord of Deep Purple, who also unfortunately passed away about a year or so ago. You know, was playing, you know, who thought to play stuff through a Marshall amp, you know, working with a Marshall and, you know, all this stuff, and, you know, trying to do imitating riffs and trying to, you know, go head to head, which he did with Ritchie Blackmore, the guitar player. You know, holy moly! You know, those folks just were. They were very creative. They were very one of a kind. They were just really unique. They weren't formulaic. They didn't do the same stuff over and over. They didn't sound like anybody else. You know, Sabbath didn't sound like anybody else. Cream sure didn't sound like anybody else. Beatles didn't even sound like themselves. They were changing. I mean, they were just innovative as heck. And again, whether you like these people or not, these were innovators. These were really, and standalone, many of the guys and gals in those bands were really awesome. You know, Heart came along. There's another band that was really, didn't sound like a chick band. You know, if you think of girly bands, you know, you don't think of Heart. You don't think of somebody, back in the day, you wouldn't have thought of somebody like Heart. You know, you're thinking of people like, you know, Joan Baez, who I like, don't get me wrong, and you know, Joni Mitchell, who's got, in my personal opinion, one of the best voices for that genre of sort of acoustic indie pop stuff back in the day. Oh, just fabulous. Just freaking fabulous. But, you know, you wouldn't have thought, Heart being the rock band that they are, that they're so, you know, they're headed by chicks, so to speak, and which I think is great. And, you know, obviously, you know, the Wilson sisters still sound fabulous today. I mean, they've lost none of their tone. It's just really, really awesome. The music they're putting out today, in my personal opinion, isn't as vibrant as the stuff they did back in the day, but they certainly have not lost any of their vocal abilities, which is really amazing, because when you look at some of the folks that are still out there making music, some of these quote-unquote old-school, old-timer guys and gals, they can't cut it anymore, you know, but that's certainly not true of them. And again, you know, these guys and gals are innovator folks. They're not your normal, typical, you know, whatevers, and I just really miss that in today's music. I feel like today's music is so daggum sterile and so damn, you know, it's formulary, and record companies, how much can you make? And, you know, how much can you make us and what can you do? I mean, back in the day, it just seemed that people were much more interested in music and musicianship than they were in you know, making jillions of dollars. And to my way of thinking, if you've got a lasting artist like Aerosmith or Clapton or, you know, any of these folks who are still doing their stuff today, they're going to make you money over the long haul. You know, you may not make a quick jillion dollars, but you're going to be a consistent money maker for the record company the whole time. Why are you putting money into these 12-year-old guys to, you know, dance around on stage? And, you know, I just never get that. I never got that, ever. I never got, okay, we're going to do these, you know, pretty boy bands and put them up there, whatever they're doing, whatever style, you know. And it's all about image, and it's not about music. It's all about image and selling an, you know, a product, you know, like cigarettes or coffee or tea or alcohol. It's not about the music anymore, in my personal opinion. And I personally think record companies are being idiots, which is probably why the internet has flourished so much as a source of music, because people are saying, we don't need this crap. We don't need all these people cheating us out of money and, you know, taking all our money and not giving us anything back and swindling us out of deals. I mean, geez, Manetti, I mean, like, enough of that stuff didn't go on back in the 50s and 60s when they, you know, all the R&B and Motown artists got, you know, gypped out of their money like crazy. And, you know, again, that's not my thing. I don't, you know, that music does nothing for me, but that's not the point. You know, these were bona fide folks working their, you know, what's off and people taking their freaking money. That's just, that's like wrong. You know, they did the same, tried to do the same thing to Hendrix. I mean, God knows how long it took Hendrix's family to finally get the money that he made. Did the same thing to Jim Croce's family. I mean, it's just, oh my Lord. So I don't know. I you know, this is part of the reason that I consider myself a rock dinosaur, because I really like old school stuff. You know, I like the heart and soul of it. I don't like this formula stuff. I don't like this synthetic stuff. I don't like this, what people put out. And God knows, if you look at the average, quote unquote, musicianship, what I call musicianship factor of most of the guys and gals who are putting out rock music or any version thereof today, it's not there. I mean, you do have isolated folks, and obviously Rush is a prime example of that. But, you know, these guys have been around since the 70s. So, you know, I consider them a new old school band, you know, kind of like Aerosmith. I mean, these guys have been around forever. Clapton's been around forever, right? You don't see too many modern bands, you know, post-90s, let's say, bands, that have much of a talent in them. Most of them are, you know, if they have talents, because they're using old school musician guys. You know, Heaven and Hell, which was, you know, basically Black Sabbath with Ronnie James Dio and Vinnie Appice, you know, was basically Black Sabbath. You know, and it's the, you know, Vinnie, you know, is Carmine's brother. I like Carmine's drumming better. No offense, Vinnie, you're a good drummer, but, you know, Carmine is the bomb. I really don't get the deal with him and Rod Stewart, and the thing with Rod Stewart, I don't get that at all. I mean, you know, if you think I'm plastic, are you kidding me? You actually brag about being the co-author of that song? Oh my Lord. I'm sure you made a load of money off that song, but oh my God, please. Oh my gosh. You know, when you look at songs like Lady that was done by Beck, Bogart, and Appice, I mean, that's drumming. This, you know, boom-tap, disco crap. Holy shoes. Give me a break. But, you know, Carmine's a great drummer. Vinny's a great drummer. You know, Ronnie James, obviously, is one of the best vocalists, in my personal opinion, in that genre ever. Ranks easily with folks like David Coverdale, who I think still has a great voice, and Robert Plant, how he used to sound. No offense, Robert, but you can't hit the notes like you used to. And I'm sorry for that, because I love Zeppelin. It's one of my all-time favorite bands. Page, of course, is, you know, guitar god, along with, you know, his cohorts of Clapton and Jeff Beck, who I think is underrated a lot. That guy is just such a cool, stylistic guy. And yeah, nobody sounds like Jeff Beck. They just don't. I mean, you hear Jeff Beck, and you can hear a couple of notes that guy plays, and it's like, oh, it's Jeff Beck. I mean, it's like uber obvious. And that's the cool stuff. I mean, for me, that's the cool stuff. It's like, you know, if you hear a solo or you hear a bass riff or you hear a drum pattern, it's like everybody else is like, oh, my Lord, please, really? Now, I know I'm whining a lot, and I apologize if the listener's going, oh, would you quit whining? Yeah, I am going to quit whining, but I'm just going to say this. Record companies need to hire and sign real musicians, not these frickin' teeny bopper people that are, look cool or have tattoos or earrings or whatever and going to make them $1 jillion and you're never going to hear from them 10 years from now. It's just ridiculous. There's no musicianship. It's all about money and hype. And I don't dig money and hype. I mean, I have nothing against money. Don't mishear me. But I like talent to be reinforced. I don't like image to be reinforced, which is why I don't like any of these image guys and gals and these big, theater type productions on stage. And most of these things that I see, and I'm not going to mention any names because I don't want people to feel slighted, but these folks that are basically Cirque du Soleil on a concert stage. And again, nothing wrong with Cirque du Soleil. It is what it is, and it doesn't pretend to be anything else, and it's what it does is great. It's exactly what it is. But I don't want to see Cirque du Soleil with lame-ass music in the back, and the lame-ass music is what you're paying for, supposedly, but what you're really paying for is the floor show. So I'm not paying for a floor show. I want to hear musicianship. I don't care how many, sequin outfits you have and how many pretty boys and pretty girls you have on stage and what your choreography's like or how many flash paths you have. I don't give two flying flips. I want to hear good musicianship. Period. End of story. Right? And if you can't do that, I have zero interest in you as an artist. None, zip, zero, the empty set. But that's just me, and I'll shut up. So back to the trivia aspects. Most of those guys back in the day that started a lot of this stuff really have yet, in my personal opinion, to be copied or equaled, with very, 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 very few exceptions. And the folks who were innovators of that, who are still doing it, my hat is off to you. I really, really appreciate it. And I really thank all the folks who are still doing the music, and I thank all the folks who did the music, but for whatever reason, some of which is because you're not around anymore, because you did dumb shit and died. No offense. I'm not saying that to slam anybody, but we all know drugs are dumb, and unfortunately, it's the disease of most musicians, whether you're blues or country or rock or jazz or whatever. It's a nasty, nasty habit, and thank God I never did it or got started or even tried it. So I'm a weirdo, kind of like Ted Nugent, and my hat's off to him too. Because whether you like Ted or not, he's a great guitar player, and he's done some really cool, innovative stuff. And this is a guy that goes all the way back to the Amboy Dukes. And most of you probably don't know who the Amboy Dukes are, but if you ever go back and do Google or YouTube, Journey to the Center of the Mind, right? And that's the coolest deal. I saw Nugent at a concert not too, five, six, 7 years ago. And he was on tour doing a solo gig, and he had Derek St. Holmes with him, who is kind of his longtime vocal guy back in the day when he was doing Cat Scratch Fever and stuff. And Derek's got just a fabulous voice. He's one of my favorite voices in rock. And when I saw them at the concert, they opened up with Journey to the Southern Mind. I was like, holy shoes. I bet you half the people in the house didn't even know what that song was. And I was like, whoop, I know that. But that's because I'm a freak and a rock trivia guy, right? Not to mention a geriatrics case, but that's another story. which is the other reason I call myself a rock dinosaur. But, it is what it is. And I really wanted to take this podcast just to talk about some kind of rock heroes and pioneers and some trivia stuff that you guys may or may not have known. Most of you probably don't know that Carl Palmer got his start with, who's the guy with the fire on his head? Arthur Brown. Amazing. The Crazy World of Arthur Brown. And you guys are probably going, who's Arthur Brown? Another great vocalist, by the way. Just awesome voice. If you guys have ever heard, the song Fire, I am the God of Hellfire and I bring you, right? That's Arthur Brown. Well, that's Carl Palmer playing drums. I think he was like 19 at the time. It's like, holy moly, These guys are talented. These are not like, 15-year-old guys dancing around on stage like a bunch of puppets or monkeys. These are guys that have real talent. Steve Winwood, for God's sake, doing the Spencer Davis Group, doing I'm a Man and Give Me Some Love, and I think he was like 15 or 16 at the time. Holy shoes, And that guy's got a very unique talent. You never hear a voice like that. I mean, the guy's just so cool, And then going on to do Traffic, which is one of my all-time favorite old school kind of jazz, pop, indie kind of stuff. And that was back in the late 60s as well. Another very innovative band, doing stuff, having sax and flute, back in the day. which wasn't very, very common. You know, most people when they say flute, you think of Jethro Tull, which is a great band, and I love Jethro Tull. You know, and Ian Anderson is just a really cool guy, very, very intelligent guy. You would never, you know, you don't usually equate rock people with intelligent people, but he is definitely, he's a brighty. There's no two ways about it. But yeah, you know, Traffic doing stuff and then going on to play with Clapton and Ginger Baker in Blind Faith, which, you know, another pretty underrated band in my personal opinion. Really, really, if you guys get a chance to see the concert that Clapton and Winwood did, I think it was in Madison Square Garden about 3 or 4 years ago, they do a lot of Blind Faith stuff and a lot of Traffic stuff and even do some Hendrix stuff. And part of the reason they do that, in case you guys don't know and gals don't know, that when Hendrix was doing the Electric Ladyland recording, the one that has All Along the Watchtower and Voodoo Child and, you know, Crosstown Traffic and all that stuff on it, Winwood was playing keyboards and a lot of that stuff. Stevie Winwood was playing keyboards for him. And if I'm not mistaken, Chris Wood, who is the flautist and saxophonist for Traffic, was also playing on some of the backtracks as well, if I'm not mistaken. And Dave Mason, who also started out with, you know, playing with Traffic, is doing the rhythm part on All Along the Watchtower, the 12-string acoustic rhythm part, if I'm not mistaken, on All Along the Watchtower. Which, by the way, for those of you who don't know, is a Bob Dylan song. So, you know, a lot of guys go, oh, my God, Bob Dylan, I mean, that guy's got a weird voice. And, well, you know, yeah. But you know what? He writes incredibly cool stuff. You know, I consider him kind of like Neil Young, you know, and no offense to these folks. They're not the greatest vocalists. They're not the greatest guitar players. But, boy, do they write some cool stuff and innovative stuff. And you can't deny that whether you like them or not. Their writing skills are really, really cool. You know, and they're still doing it, and they're still doing cool stuff, so you can't knock that at all. Now, yeah, so All Along the Watchtower is a Bob Dylan song, guys and gals. So there you go. That was your dilly for the day. And so, you know, again, back in the late 60s, you know, you got all these great artists doing these weird stuff that, you know, you just don't see that kind of stuff today much anymore. And you know, it's not like I'm one of these, you know, 70-year-old guys going, oh, when I was a youngster, you know, but geez, Manetti, you know, you don't hear people doing the kind of stuff those guys did with very, very few exceptions. And it was so replete back in the day. You know, when you look back at the history of rock music and rock and roll from, you know, the mid-60s through the 70s up until the early 80s, I mean, you had all these great artists and bands doing, you know, you could spit anywhere in any direction and you'd see a great artist, a great band. You know, you don't see that anymore. It's like, you know, they've become very few and far between. So my hat's off to all those folks who started it and, you know, who do what they did to create what we have as part of the history. And I really respect that. And whether I like the artist or not, or whether I think the artist, you know, whether I like the style of music the artist did or not, and there's a lot of people I don't like, as most of you know, I'm pretty prejudicial in that regard. I'm pretty snobby about the music I like. And a lot of the bands I really detest, people just think are just the greatest things since sliced bread. And that's okay, because that's what music is. It's going to speak different languages to different people. The same music's going to speak a different language to different people. And some people are going to understand it and like it, and some people aren't. And that's okay. You know, that's why we have a jillion bands and a jillion artists doing all these different styles of music, because no two people are the same and no two people's ears are the same. So whether I like an artist or not, if you're an innovator and you have talent, what I call talent, you play your own instruments and you're really, really good and you're not some, you know, record hype from a record company or producer or whatever, my hat is off to you. Whether you're playing country, rap, rock, heavy metal, acoustic, indie, pop, punk rock, I don't care. If you're doing it and you're doing it well, my hats are off to you. And I really mean that. You know, you want to hear some really innovative stuff, go back and listen to some of the old blues guys, you know, back in the day, you know, where a lot of the British people got their influence. A lot of your, you know, Clapton certainly is a blues freak, and a lot of your guitar players got their riffs playing the blues, you know, got ideas to listen to blues and stuff, so go back and listen to some of the innovator guys, some of the stuff that was done back in the day, you know, some of the Willie Dixons and the Howlin' Wolfs. I mean, those guys are just, Howlin' Wolf's still one of my favorite blues guys. He's also one of the few guys you ever see, black blues artist, playing a Firebird. That's like, what? I mean, the first time I saw him playing a Gibson Firebird, a picture of him with a Firebird, I was like, what the hell is that? I mean, I love Firebirds, you know, and obviously so does Johnny Winter, because that's just about all he plays. There's another really good blues rock guitar player, too, that's been around forever and a day. Most of you may or may not know his brother is Edgar Winter, the Frankenstein guy that everybody knows, Edgar Winter Group. You know Frankenstein, but got a lot of other stuff that's really good, just not just that, right? At any rate, yeah, he's one of the few black blues guys that actually played a Firebird, because most of you blues guys are playing Telecasters, Tellys, or they're playing Gibson ES semi-hollow body type guitars, you know, the ES-335s, 337s, 175, 137s, whatever, 345s. They're not playing Gibson Firebirds. It's like, holy moly. And you got to love him for that. I love Firebirds. So I saw that. I was like, woohoo. But I just really like Howlin' Wolf stuff. I think his stuff is really cool. Willie Dixon stuff's really awesome. Now, most of those guys have some really cool stuff. In fact, if you go back and look at a lot of the Cream stuff, you know, Cream are doing Spoonful, you know, which is a Willie Dixon song, if I'm not mistaken. You know, Chester Burnett, by the way, is the name for Howlin' Wolf. So if you see Chester Burnett or anything, that's Howlin' Wolf. So yeah, you know, go back and listen to some of that stuff. You hear some really, really great guitar playing, really innovative stuff, really great blues harmonica stuff, just really cool stuff. Those guys could really blow, no pun intended. Really cool, in a good way. Not like the music today blows in a bad way. So anyway, I hope you guys like some of the history lesson and the trivia stuff, and I hope I didn't ramble too much and bitch too much about the music, but I just really am not real fond of the stuff I've been hearing for the last 15, 20 years, with very few exceptions. And I wish some people would get back out and do some good stuff, or I wish record companies would get a brain and a soul and you know, sign people who are really talented, not people who just look cute on stage, who women and guys are falling over, and you know, who they can put a big theatrical dilly on stage and, you know, be Cirque du Soleil, basically, and sell tickets because of the stage show and not because of the talent. And you got to do that to mask your masking talent. You're trying to divert attention to cover up the fact that these people don't have any talent, in my personal opinion. So if you got a good stage show and you're talented, great. But if you're putting on a bunch of stage show with 9,000 people on stage and dancers and people swinging on trapezes and doing all kind of crazy shit, that's a circus. That's not a concert. Hope you guys enjoyed it. If you didn't, sorry. You can always not listen. I'll be back again with some more stuff, and hope everybody is great and does well, and hang in there and listen to stuff and introduce yourself to some music you haven't heard. If you don't know some of the artists I mentioned, go back and pick their stuff up. YouTube them, Google them, go to some old record stores or old CDs, used CD stores, pick up some of their stuff. Really, really, really good stuff. Really, really good stuff. Thanks, and a special thanks to all the artists, both living and not living, who really gave their all for the art and for us as listeners. Thank you. It was much appreciated. Have a good one.